Makeshift Stories is a proud member of the Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial. Is there a place in time where logic breaks down and wonderment begins? Could that be somewhere or sometime along an indefinable line between the reasonable and highly unlikely? Makeshift Stories presents a monthly journey into the improbable. Never look a gift horse in the mouth, as the saying goes, but sayings can be wrong. The motivation behind your good fortune may not always be entirely altruistic, so it might be advisable to read the entire agreement before you accept that free service. In this month's story, after a tumor damaged Rena's spinal cord, she is confined to a wheelchair until she volunteers for an experimental treatment using newly developed implants. The treatment, which she could never otherwise afford, is successful, and initially she is thankful for the chance to walk again. But there is a catch-22. In order to retain her mobility, Rena must provide a service for the rest of her life, which she has inadvertently agreed to in the fine print of the end-user agreement. We invite you now to sit back and relax as you listen to Makeshift Stories episode 140, The Ouroboros Eula. Somewhere and sometime, you may want to read the entire end-user agreement before you click.
Rena dreamed she was floating underwater, face toward the surface. A jellyfish, silhouetted against sun-leached blue-green water, slowly danced above her, stirred by swells, which arrived in pairs with long periods of calm between. There was a jarring flash, and she found herself sitting at a desk, staring through a silver fractal frost pattern growing on a window. Outside, the winter wind was doing its best to rip the last three stubborn leaves from a dormant tree. She watched until they finally gave up, allowing themselves to be swept away. Then she was flipping through a book. Each page contained six symbols, different types of birds or trees or clouds. They were arranged as equilateral triangles with one at the top, two in the middle, and three on the bottom. When she got to the last page, the book disappeared in a burst of static, like someone had switched to an empty TV channel. A jumble of patterns and objects followed, a suit jacket, a bag, then too much, too fast to comprehend, stormed through her mind. Then the dream ended, as suddenly as it had started.
You can sit up now, Rena.
Dr. Mateo, Auxilium's lead project doctor, gently prodded.
I'm finished. The data transfer rate between the bridge we implanted at L1, where the damage to your spinal cord is, and the module in the primary motor cortex of your brain is optimal. Probably better than what your original nerves could do.
I had the dream again while I was under,
Rena mentioned groggily.
Is that the only thing you've noticed? No headaches or pain?
Dr. Mateo made a note on her tablet.
No, nothing else. But what about the dream? There's always some scrambled stuff I can't make any sense of. It's an abstract jumble of objects and weird patterns. They all start with the same images. A jellyfish, waves, leaves, and a book. Sometimes I have the dream several times a night. It started about a week after I got out of the hospital. Do you think it has something to do with the implants?
Are you sure you have no other issues? No dizziness or tingling in your limbs? No problems walking or performing daily activities?
The doctor probed distractedly while looking at some unseen data on her screen.
No, just the dream, but...
The dream,
Dr. Mateo echoed, obviously not wanting to talk about it.
The dream will most likely go away once your subconscious has processed whatever it's trying to deal with, but I don't see how it's related. I could prescribe an anti-anxiety drug. That would help you sleep better. However, I'm not a psychiatrist, Ms. Guerrero. The module in your brain is in the primary motor cortex, which has nothing to do with dreams. In fact, it's shut down during REM sleep. Look at it this way. It's the first time you've been able to walk in years, so I'm sure there's some psychological impact that you are unconscious of.
Dr. Mateo made more notes on her tablet, then turned to Rena.
That's it for today. You're making great progress, Reyna. Keep up the physiotherapy and I'll see you in 10 weeks.
The doctor left her alone in the examination room so she could get back into her street clothes. 3 years ago, a benign tumor in her lower back had wrapped itself around her spinal cord, like a cobra, and had taken away her life. At least the meager existence she had at the time. After dropping out of university with a half-finished degree, Reyna had only been able to find part-time work. Barely scraping by as a barista, she couldn't afford the delicate operation to remove the tumor. Because she had defaulted on her student loans and had no clear career path, no one would lend her the $120,000 she needed. At first, Reyna simply felt a tingling in her legs, then numbness. Then one day she collapsed behind the counter while making an Americano. The coffee chain paid for the ambulance and the initial tests, but once their culpability had been disproven, they gave her notice and stopped paying the medical bills. Reyna was left penniless, with a challenging future ahead. Now she was walking, or more accurately, learning to walk again, and things looked modestly promising, except for the persistent dream. She took the elevator to the main floor, telling herself optimistically that when she came back, she'd be able to use the stairs. The doors dinged open to reveal the upscale lobby. Reyna was always taken back by the opulence of the space. There was so much of it left empty between the scattered islands of luxury brand furnishings. Auxilium Research, despite being a startup, had rented offices in the most prestigious building in the business zone, which she assumed either meant their investors had deep pockets and a lot of confidence, or they were intending on a quick sale before something went wrong. She was banking on the former. Their technology was amazing. Just hobbling across the lobby was proof of that. A muscular, middle-aged man in a polo shirt and jeans with an expensive-looking suit jacket thrown over top caught her eye. He was sitting on a stylish but uncomfortable-looking designer sofa on the near side of the cavernous lobby, occasionally glancing up from his tablet, pretending not to notice her. However, it wasn't the man, but the jacket that bothered Reyna. She had seen it somewhere else, maybe in a store window, or in a video, or online. She wasn't sure. It sported a distinctive floral pattern containing 10 rose blossoms. The number tugged at something in her mind. Again, she wasn't sure why. Reyna walked past the man, trying not to look, then hurried out the front doors, deciding she was just being paranoid. She wasn't so sure when she noticed the unique pattern momentarily appear through a forest of people on the packed bus back to her communal apartment in a burb ghetto track house. "There's someone here to see you. I think they're from the program." Elisa blocked Reyna's way to get her attention, as she limped through the front door, exhausted by the 40-minute walk from the transit drop. Their rental was on the far edge of a revitalization zone which was part of a subdivision once called Forest Glade. It was anything but a peaceful green glade now, and Reyna doubted there were ever any trees. The 40-minute walk was the only reason Reyna and her five other roommates could afford the track house tenement. Houses further away, too far to walk to, and too expensive to get transit to, had been mostly abandoned and left to the elements and occasional squatter. Houses closer to a transit drop were too expensive. Elisa, a freelance coder and her childhood friend, had let her stay gratis for the last 2 years in the garage-become bedroom they currently shared. Reyna did all the cooking, so no one complained. It was Elisa who had spotted the ad for the experimental implant program and encouraged her friend to volunteer.
"You don't know who they really are, and you still let them in anyway?"
Reyna complained, looking suspiciously around her friend into the common room.
"Not in there,"
Elisa explained defensively.
"She flashed some official-looking ID at me through the peephole. I told her to wait on the back deck. You know I don't let people in that I don't know."
Relieved, Reyna dropped her shoulder bag beside the front door.
"Okay. I'll find out what they want. Keep an eye on me through the kitchen window, just in case."
Forest Glade wasn't the safest revitalization burb, so Reyna was cautious as she limped around the house to the tiny backyard, half covered by a rotting wood deck. She spotted a woman, maybe in her 30s, it was hard to tell, dressed in business attire, sitting in the shade of the house on one of the beat-up lawn chairs Elisa had scavenged. When the woman heard her approach, she looked up from her cell phone. Raina noticed a polka-dot patterned shoulder bag laying beside her. 15 dots, she noted. The number seemed to trigger something, causing a disorienting burst of abstract images in her mind. She felt dizzy, wobbled, then reached out and grabbed the cracked vinyl siding to support herself.
"Are you okay, Miss Guerrero?"
the woman asked in a concerned tone and got up to offer a hand.
"I'm okay. I'm still relearning how to walk,"
Raina explained, brushing the offered hand away, and steadied herself.
"Who are you? Why are you here? Forest Glade is a long way out. People generally don't just show up here."
"I'm with Ouroboros Equities."
The woman handed Raina an ID card.
"Please authenticate it."
Raina hesitated.
"I insist."
The woman pushed the ID into Raina's hand. Raina pulled her phone out and scanned the complicated holographic pattern on the front of the card with its camera. The device had barely finished when it pinged the results. A logo, shaped like a dragon eating its tail, appeared and underneath the woman's name. Su Ming Pak, Biotech Investment Officer, Ouroboros Equities, 99% certainty.
"Never heard of you or your company."
She dismissed with a shrug and handed the ID back.
"We invest in promising biotech, Miss Guerrero. Ouroboros is underwriting the development of the motor cortex bridge you received. If you read your contract carefully, you'll see us listed under third parties. We paid for your procedure. So, we are naturally very interested to see the results of our investment. From the simple fact that you are standing here, I can tell you are progressing well. But I'm interested to know if you've experienced any side effects. Cognitive dissonance, perhaps?"
"No, I'm perfectly fine,"
Raina lied. Had Dr. Mateo mentioned the dreams in his reports? But why would that trigger a visit from the project's financial backer? She would have expected a psychologist or psychiatrist or a counselor or something.
"Everything's in Dr. Mateo's reports. If your company is underwriting the project, I assume you'd have access to them,"
she noted suspiciously.
"Yes, I've read them all. But we'd like to verify things firsthand. If anything comes to mind, anything at all out of the ordinary, please note it."
Raina's phone chimed.
"I just sent you my contact information. We want to make absolutely sure that there are no side effects before the technology is released."
"But I've told Dr. Mateo..."
"I shouldn't have to remind you that you are obligated to report side effects and anything else we ask for, if we request,"
Su Ming noted, impatience creeping into her voice.
"And I'm requesting now. It's in the end user agreement for the implant you signed. Think of it as your way to pay Ouroboros back for its generosity. You are very lucky, Miss Guerrero. You can walk again. A little loss of privacy is a small price to pay."
Su Ming extracted herself from the lawn chair, which expressed its relief by creaking.
"Miss Guerrero, remember anything, no matter how small. We'll be expecting to hear from you once a day."
The woman stopped to brush her clothes off, then disappeared around the side of the house. Raina brushed the sweat from her forehead with the back of a forearm as she finished making a soy milk latte and Americano on the big espresso machine, which took up half the length of the counter at the Leaf and Bean. She had landed the job through a friend a month ago, and despite the lack of AC, was happy to be working again. It was midday and the cafe was empty, except for a family of tourists and a new regular. To take advantage of what little breeze there was and to avoid the overheated cafe interior, the vacationers had taken refuge at a table outside under a logo-infested umbrella. The regular, who had appeared, according to the other staff, a day before Raina started, was at his usual table, pretending not to watch her, which creeped her out. There was something about the man, but she had finally chalked it up to paranoia and the unexpected appearance of the woman from Ouroboros Equities a few weeks back. Today, he had made a big show of taking out his laptop and positioning it on the table, so Raina couldn't miss the distinctive pattern which decorated the back of the screen. A pyramid made of 21 skulls on each face. She had stared at it until the vacationers came in to place their order. Embarrassed, she couldn't recall how long she had been distracted. She thought it was only a second, but the tourists acted as if she had been ignoring them for quite a while. If she was honest with herself, it hadn't been the first incident where she had zoned out at the sight of something and lost track of time. Not trusting the woman from Ouroboros and resenting having to write reports, she had decided not to mention these incidents. Reyna glanced up from the espresso machine and caught the regular turning his head back to his screen. Had he been studying her? To her relief, Kayla, another staff member, meandered in from the street, sweating from the mid-afternoon heat. She sat down under the only working ceiling fan and nodded at Reyna, pulled out a beat-up laptop, opened it, then settled in to wait for her shift to start.
Are you okay?
Reyna snapped back from wherever she had been. Kayla was standing at the counter with a concerned look on her face. The vacationers outside had left. Their table had been cleared and the new regular was gone as well.
You hadn't moved for a while. I was concerned. I didn't mean to startle you.
Kayla apologized.
How long?
I don't know. I just noticed.
Reyna found herself gaping at the back of Kayla's laptop. It sported a pyramid skin similar to the man's. However, hers had 15 green dots to a side.
When did you get that decal for your laptop?
She inquired warily.
Oh, that. I've had that for a while. A friend of a friend gave it to me. I liked it, so I...
Did you see the other guy's laptop who was just in here? He had the same one.
No, he left as soon as I came in.
I don't remember that.
Reyna felt suddenly disoriented. As she watched, Kayla's face began to morph, like a Photoshop filter was being applied to the woman. This time, the dream had changed. Reyna found herself looking up at 21 jellyfish silhouetted against the surface of the ocean. Out of the window, she saw 28 stubborn leaves being harassed by an icy winter wind, and the book contained 36 pages, each imprinted with the Ouroboros logo. The dragon eating its tail in 36 different styles. The dream ended suddenly in the usual jumble of patterns and objects. Then Reyna woke with a start to find a concerned Elisa looking down at her.
You were out for quite a while. Auxilium paid for your ride back here. And that woman from the investment firm showed up. I didn't let her in. We need to talk.
Reyna propped herself up on her elbows and looked around. She was laying on her cot in the converted attached garage. The small windows in the now useless door were dark. It was night, she realized.
How long?
A couple of hours. They said they had given you a sedative. I wanted to take you to a hospital, but they insisted you were okay, that you shouldn't have gone back to work so soon, that you had just pushed yourself too hard. What happened?
I don't really remember. I was working, talking to another staff member coming on shift, and noticed the skin on her laptop. It was a pyramid made of dots or something. There were 15, I think.
15 what?
15 dots on each side of the pyramid. I don't know why I remember that.
You were mumbling about numbers in your sleep. Do you remember any of them?
3, 6, 10, 15, 21. Maybe 36 and 28. I'm not sure.
Elisa looked at her thoughtfully, then helped her friend to stand.
All those numbers, do you know what they have in common?
Reyna shrugged.
Triangles,
Elisa pointed out.
Picture an equilateral triangle made up of 3 dots, then 6 or 10. Those numbers aren't random. I've got to show you something I discovered while you were out.
Elisa led her friend out of the garage and up to the bonus room on the second floor she had taken over for an office. 2 ancient flat screens were propped up on an old door which served as a desk. They were on and full of open windows.
Take the spare chair,
Elisa encouraged, pointing to a recycled bar stool. Once Reyna had dragged it over to the makeshift workstation and sat down, Elisa expanded one of the windows.
I was trying to work for a client, but my network connection kept dropping. You were asleep, and no one else was home, so I was the only person on our Wi-Fi. In fact, this time of day, most people around here are at work. So I checked the router stats, and I noticed this.
Elisa pointed to a connected device list.
I've never seen that one before. Look at the amount of data it's sending and receiving.
What is it?
You.
Elisa pointed at Rena's head.
Your implant, at least as far as I can tell. It showed up on the router after they brought you back, then proceeded to eat all of our bandwidth while you were sleeping. Now that you're awake, it's still sending and receiving data, but at a low rate.
She opened another window.
This is what's in the stream. It looks like encrypted blockchain data.
Exhausted and angry, Reyna sat in a small, bleak examination room waiting for Dr. Mateo. She hadn't been able to sleep, so she had taken the first bus in the morning to the business zone. Initially, the receptionist had refused to let her stay because she didn't have an appointment.
What have you put in my head?
Reyna was finally forced to complain loud enough so the other patients would hear.
It's connected to the net and sending data. I'm getting these repeating dreams, weird flashes, and losing track of time because of it. I want it removed.
The receptionist tried to calm her, then disappeared and returned a few moments later to lead Reyna to an examination room located in an isolated service area of the office, far away and safely out of earshot of Auxilium's luxurious waiting room. That had been 4 hours ago, but Reyna refused to give up and leave. Finally, the door burst open without a knock, and Su Ming, accompanied by a familiar-looking man, crowded into the tiny room. Reyna stared at the man. Cleaned up and dressed in a conservative business suit, she didn't immediately recognize him. Then it suddenly clicked into place.
You're the regular from the coffee shop!
She gasped, then realized he was also the man from the lobby who had followed her on the bus. Su Ming closed the door, and the man immediately blocked it with his body.
Why are you here? Where's Dr. Mateo? And why is that guy?
Reyna nodded at the man indignantly.
Been spying on me.
She started to get up to leave. Su Ming motioned for her to sit down.
Before you go, you need to listen to me, Miss Guerrero.
She explained, in a tone which suggested Reyna didn't have a choice.
First, we have every right to keep an eye on our investment. I've already told you, it's part of the agreement you signed. And I suspect, based on your outburst at reception this morning, that you aren't telling us everything in your reports. You are not keeping up your end of the agreement. How much do you think it costs to develop a new biotechnology like the motor cortex bridge, Miss Guerrero? Do you have any idea, really? Billions. It takes billions of dollars. The technology and knowledge to do this has been around for years, but the economics were not. At least until Ouroboros got involved. There's simply not enough people with your specific injury to make development worthwhile. However, when Dr. Mateo approached us, we had an idea, a combination of seemingly unrelated opportunities. That's our expertise, identifying unique ways to monetize new technology.
I don't see how this is relevant. I want to see Dr. Mateo.
Reyna tried to sound confident and determined, but instead her words came out as more of a plea.
It's my implant. It's connected.
Online, yes. We know it connects to the net. That's a significant part of its function, and it's working fine. That's not an issue.
But...
Reyna tried to object and started to get up again. The man blocking the door reached over and gently pushed her back down.
Your implant is fine. Relax and let me finish.
Su Min demanded impatiently.
You would have never walked again without us, Miss Guerrero. No one was going to invest billions in a new tech for purely humanitarian reasons. However, there was a win-win. What if we could use the biotech for more than bridging damaged nerves and get our return from another capacity of the system? That was our brilliant realization. I'm sure you've heard that only part of our brain's capacity is used at any given time. The urban myth is that we only use 10% of our brain. The myth is wrong. We use a lot more, but there is significant surplus capacity when we sleep or do repetitive tasks, like making coffee in a cafe. The average person burns between 1,600 and 2,000 calories a day. That's a few dollars of food, cheaper if it's mostly sugar. Did you know that in the US alone, data centers chew up 80 billion kilowatts of power a year? That's billions of dollars of electricity. And that's why everyone is trying to make their data processing centers more efficient. But we had a radical idea. What about all that unused organic brain power? Think of it this way. Sugar compared to tons of coal or natural gas. No maintenance, no pollution, no real estate needed. But how to tap into all that cheap potential processing power? That's what Dr. Mateo's bridge offered as a byproduct, and that's why we funded her. We needed a field trial, but who would willingly have an experimental device placed in their head unless there were some tangible benefit for them? So, you got to walk again, and we got access to your unused synapses. A more than fair exchange, don't you agree? Nothing is ever free, Miss Guerrero.
And the dreams? Is this causing the dreams and the lost time?
We were concerned there might be some data bleed into the subconscious mind. Hence the testing program. We have been feeding the unused synapse in your brain number sequences to process, then trying to trigger reactions through external stimulus, such as visual representations of the sequences we fed to your brain. That's what Michael here has been doing, testing you and watching for reactions. Based on your experience, we now know we need to make improvements before the bridge is offered to a broader range of people. It will be heavily subsidized, of course, to get the market penetration we need. First, with injuries like yours, then other applications such as chronic pain.
Take it out!
Raina began to panic.
I didn't agree to this!
Actually, you did, Miss Guerrero. It's in the EULA. You are free to terminate the contract and have the device taken out. But we're not responsible for that cost. You'll have to come up with the money yourself. Plus, you'll lose your recently acquired mobility.
Su Ming stood for a moment, looking at Raina, considering, then appeared to make a decision.
On the other hand, Ouroboros Equities is about finding the benefit where none appears to be. I have a proposal for you to consider.
The Alberta Podcast Network, powered by ATB Financial, is proud to be a sponsor of this year's Pod Summit, Western Canada's podcast conference. Join us May 5th at CKUA in Edmonton for an amazing day of learning and connecting, plus over $3,000 in giveaways, including a fabled Shure SM7B. If you have a podcast, you will learn how to make it sound amazing, grow your audience, and create a show your listeners will love. If you don't, you'll learn how to start one, and we'll be happy to welcome you to our community. Tickets are just $150. Make sure stories will be there, and we'd love to meet you in person. So don't delay. Head over to podsummit.com and register today. We hope that you've enjoyed this month's story. As always, if you like what we're doing, please tell your friends about us, or write a review on Apple Podcasts or like our Facebook page. We love hearing your comments, so send us an email to makeshiftstories@gmail.com or visit our website at makeshiftstories.com. And thanks for all those from all over the planet who have already emailed us. We release a new story every month between the 15th and the 20th. To listen to Makeshift Stories on your iOS or Android device, please download Stitcher Radio from iTunes or the Google Play Store. This month's episode was written by Ellen V. Hare and read by Mitchell Tu. The opening and closing themes were composed and recorded by David H. And don't forget to listen to series, which is posted around the beginning of the month. Makeshift Stories is released under a Creative Commons non-commercial attribution, no derivative license, which means you're free to share our stories. Just remember to credit us and don't alter anything.